the Catholic Church sends us into a bruised and broken world. No matter how busy we are, or how much we struggle to make sense of the madness around us, we are called to perform a work of great value for the evangelization of the world. In 2015, a small group of local media pioneers listened and answered this call of the Second Vatican Council, and Carolina Catholic Radio was born. Today, we are the Carolina Catholic Media Network and broadcast the truth of Jesus Christ on 7 distinct platforms to meet the demands of today's media consumers. Our network produces more original local programming than nearly any other EWTN affiliate nationwide, and each of our hosts are committed to educate, inform, inspire, and enrich lives no matter where they are on their journey of faith. Catholic media consumption has a direct impact on our lives. It helps us learn, teach, and practice our faith. And in a world that seeks to cancel the truth, we need it more than ever before. Now, through the end of 2022, we need your support and ask you to join our Circle of Friends giving campaign. As a Carolina Catholic community, we invite you to sponsor or join a circle with those whom you live, practice, and share passion for the faith. Consider sponsoring a circle to memorialize a loved one by asking your friends and family to donate to us in their honor. Or join a circle sponsored by your favorite local program host. There are many possibilities. It is together as a circle of friends, our voice, our community, and our faith will be strong, leaving a legacy for those who follow our footsteps. Join us today at CarolinaCatholicMedia.org.
This is Carolina Catholic Media Showcase.
Good afternoon, Carolina Catholic community. Welcome to the Carolina Catholic Showcase. My name is Elizabeth Harris, and I serve as Senior Regional Programs Manager for Sidewalk Advocates for Life. I want to share with you the mission of Sidewalk Advocates for Life. It is to train, equip, and support communities across the United States and in the world in sidewalk advocacy, to be the hands and feet of Christ, offering loving, life-affirming alternatives to all present at abortion and abortion referral facilities, thereby eliminating demand and ending abortion. So today, I have here with me Tyler Brooks, who is the senior counsel for the Thomas More Society. You may have heard of them. And Tyler is licensed in North Carolina and also in at least one or two other states, I believe. Tyler, is that correct? We'll let you introduce yourself in a minute. But yeah, we're just so excited to have Tyler on today. I know that I personally get to work with Tyler a little bit through the Thomas More Society because he often helps defend our free speech rights with our sidewalk advocates. And we're just so grateful for the work that he's a part of and his yes to being a part of this mission. And I'm just so excited for him to share more about what's going on in the U.S. Legislatively and with law as it relates to abortion, and also just share some of the awesome things that have gone on in the state of North Carolina specifically that he has been a part of. So just to get started, Tyler, I'm going to let you introduce yourself really quick and give some background.
Sure. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. And thank you for everything that you and Sidewalk Advocates for Life do. It is a privilege to represent you and your organization and all that you do to rescue the unborn and help mothers who are in need. I am a senior counsel, one of many senior counsel at the Thomas More Society, which is a national nonprofit law firm located in Chicago that provides pro bono representation to individuals throughout the country on issues related to life, family, and also recently expanded to the area of election integrity. The Law Center has a long history in the area of protecting life, and many of the names of the lawyers who are associated with the organization are some of the great heroes of the movement, including the president, Tom Brekka, Peter Breen, Chris Ferrara, Martin Cannon, and Steve Crampton. These folks have made great law throughout the country and defended many sidewalk advocates from trial courts, little teeny tiny trial courts on defending advocates on misdemeanor charges, all the way up to federal courts, and we've been to the Supreme Court. So it's a wonderful organization. It's my privilege to be able to work with them. And just as a disclaimer, everything I say today will only be my opinion, my personal opinion. I am not speaking on behalf of the organization, just so no one is misled.
Sure. Thank you, Tyler. Yeah, that's so great. So I wanted to just start with question number one, which is, what did the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision do to the legal landscape regarding abortion in the United States?
Yes, the Dobbs decision, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, was a very important decision in what is abortion jurisprudence. Going back to the 60s, there had been a line of cases that had begun allowing, they began in the area of contraception. The Griswold case of the Supreme Court overturning state laws that restricted access to contraception. And then that in 1973 turned into the Roe decision, Roe versus Wade, which legalized abortion throughout the country and prohibited states from regulating abortion and overturned numerous laws that were on states. And really made abortion a federal issue. So every time a state tried to regulate abortion, it was going to go to federal court and be a federal issue. The Supreme Court in the 1990s issued an opinion, Casey versus Planned Parenthood, that it imposed a slightly modified decision, the undue burden standard, but that still was a very permissive standard for abortion. And still kept, gave courts great leeway to strike down laws that attempted to protect the unborn. And laws right here in North Carolina fell in light of the Roe-Casey framework. Mm-hmm. Jackson, Dobbs versus Jackson, undid all of that. The Supreme Court's opinion is pretty clear that it wants the question of abortion to go back to the states. It wants the federal courts out of the issue of abortion. Mm-hmm. We probably will talk later about how that wish is not going to be granted. But what Justice Kavanaugh said in oral argument on Dobbs is pretty much the takeaway. He asked advocates both for both sides, isn't it true that the U.S. Constitution is not pro-life on abortion, and it is not pro-choice on abortion? It is just simply silent on abortion. Abortion is not a federal constitutional issue. And that's basically the takeaway of Dobbs. Abortion is not a federal constitutional issue. Now, and of course, the Dobbs decision was 3-6, because Chief Justice Roberts, even though he didn't join the opinion written by Justice Alito, still would have upheld the law that was passed by Mississippi. Mm-hmm. So, and as many people know, and has often been remarked upon, the reasoning of Roe and Casey never really made sense, even to pro-abortion, pro-choice scholars. Those who liked the outcome, who liked that result, when they were being intellectually honest, said, we really don't think that this legal reasoning makes any sense. How you can read a right to abortion in the U.S. Constitution, you're just making it up. And which is why much of the argument in Dobbs centered upon precedent, whether you should overturn precedent, the principles of stare decisis, whether you should let a case stand just because it's been the law for a long time. And fortunately, the court did not adhere to stare decisis. It corrected its error, in Roe. And did what was really the minimum that it should have done, which is return the issue to the states. Conceivably, they could have written an opinion which was stronger, which could have protected the unborn as a matter of federal constitutional law. It could have gone further. It did not do that. Many of us would have liked to have seen it go further and do that. And we can talk about ways that maybe that can be done, but it did not do that.
Sure. And isn't there a common misunderstanding about Roe versus Wade in general, like that it, you know, a lot of people don't realize that it made abortion legal up through to all 9 months, right? Is that correct? I don't know how you would articulate that, but basically that's my understanding.
Yeah, Roe had nuances. It was not it was not as freewheeling as many people think. There were more nuances because Roe imposed this trimester framework, which, as I understand it, had more to do with law than medicine, and talked about the state's interest and weighed the state's interest versus the mother's interest, what they deemed to be the mother's interest. Whether it's the mother's interest or not is what they deem to be the mother's interest at the different stages of the pregnancy, and when did the state's interest in prohibiting abortion outweigh? So there's a lot of nuances that arose, and Casey brought out a lot more nuances. But the problem is in the law, there's what's called the abortion distortion, and a lot of law, as soon as it's an abortion case, a lot of the principles of law that would normally be applied, it's like they go out the window. General principles of law, standard principles of law, and that applies in the First Amendment case context when we're trying to defend the First Amendment rights of sidewalk advocates. If we were defending the First Amendment rights of anti-war protesters or, people handing out, the flyers for, a political organization, like just a regular political organization, it would be one thing. We get one standard. When you go into court and you're arguing on behalf of a pro-life organization, you get the abortion distortion, and then you often don't get the same protections from the courts as you should.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's been recognized by Justice Scalia recognized that. He wrote that into one of his opinions. So that's not he's saying that is a U.S. Supreme Court justice talking about the lack of protection that speech on the abortion gets. Now, that should not be the case. I mean, that is not legally the case. I mean, there are certain types of speech that gets lesser levels of protection than other types of speech. For instance, commercial speech, gets lesser levels of protection than, say, core political speech, or obscenity, or gets lesser levels of protection, or pornography gets lesser levels of protection. But speech on abortion, it should be protected just as much as speech as any other kind of regular core political speech. Just like vote for so and so, or I think we should be a democracy, or I think we should be a monarchy. Core political speech. That's what speech on abortion and life should be. But unfortunately, you don't get that a lot.
Right. Exactly. Yep. And I know all too well from listening in a lot of conversations with sidewalk advocate leaders across the nation and consulting with the Thomas More Society. You guys are so wonderful, and we could not do what we do without you. So thank you, Tyler, for your work. And I wanted to ask, does Dobbs necessarily mean that abortion can never be an issue of federal law?
No, and that's one of the real problems. Right after Dobbs was decided, you saw action in Congress by certain members of Congress who wanted to pass legislation, a statute, federal statute making abortion a federal right. There are lots of federal rights that are created by statute that are not in the Constitution, right. But there are federal rights. You can look at, say, for instance, Title VII creates a lot of federal rights that are not necessarily in the Constitution. They're above and beyond the rights that are in the Constitution. They would create a federal right by statute. Now they have to figure out what is the congressional power or the constitutional power that gives Congress the ability to do that. Is it the Commerce Clause? Is it something else? But they would attempt to do that by federal statute. And if they did that by federal statute, it would be dramatic. It would wipe out every single state law. It could preempt every single state law.
Yeah.
Even if it's in your state constitution that life is protected, you could have the best provision, the best pro-life laws in your state that imaginable, and Congress could pass a law and preempt it. So it's called preemption.
Right.
And so long as Congress clearly says I'm preempting your state law, the state law would be preempted. And so I think that's going to be an issue that comes up a lot more in national political debates with certain politicians pushing that issue, saying that we need to codify what they say, codify Roe.
Right.
They probably mean codify Casey, but I don't know. Maybe they mean codify Roe. So we see that. Also, what we saw after the Dobbs decision was the Biden administration came out with an executive order that did a number of things that looked at pretty much every area of federal law that touches on the issue of abortion and said, how can we activate that and use that for the purposes of or exploit those for the cause of abortion. Mm. So, for instance, one case that the Thomas More Society has been involved in involves the use of the EMTALA statute, which folks who are involved in medicine are familiar with the EMTALA statute, which is a statute which is meant to prevent emergency rooms from kicking out patients because they can't pay. If a patient comes in and they're in serious medical need, they're going to bleed out, hospital can't just say, well, you can't pay, so we're kicking you out.
Right.
The hospital has to stabilize you, even if you have no money.
Right.
So that's EMTALA. So they tried to use EMTALA to essentially turn every emergency department in the United States into an abortion facility, notwithstanding what the state law on the issue might be. The state of Texas and some organizations sued on that and actually got a preliminary injunction, and Thomas More Society filed an amicus in support of their injunction and got that. And one of the things is to do that, they have to completely read out the part of EMTALA that recognizes the unborn child. Because the way the EMTALA statute is written, if a pregnant woman comes to an emergency room, doctor and the medical providers are specifically required to provide services to, according to the statute, the pregnant mother and the child. The child is specifically a protected person.
Right.
The unborn child is a protected person under EMTALA. And yet the Biden administration wants to read a person out of the statute. That was a victory in Texas. Some other courts are siding with the Biden administration. There are some other attempts, and some other folks are urging the administration to essentially turn VA hospitals and military bases into abortion centers and just say anybody can come there, whether you have a connection to the military or the VA, we're just going to let everybody come there. One of the most serious ways we've seen this happen, though, and again, Thomas More is right on the forefront of this, is enforcement of the FACE Act, which is a law that was passed in the 90s. Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances. And that law was intended to stop what was happening there, where pro-life advocates were engaging and barricading, were locking arms and were barricading themselves and preventing abortion clinic opening. And even there was, unfortunately, an assassination of an abortion doctor. That's right. What that law was intended to provide. That was the background for that law.
Yeah.
Now, what we're seeing is there is Merrick Garland, the attorney general, is using that law on what would be either extremely minor violations of state law or not even violations of state law, and saying that they're violations of the FACE Act. So let me just give you an example. If a pro-life advocate and a clinic escort, you know, someone who's trying to get the pregnant woman into the abortion facility, if they just sort of collide, not even clear who, you know, who was it that, you know, who was at fault there, you know,
right.
Or they just have sort of a minor scuffle with one another. You know, the federal government now is taking an interest in those cases and charging, not of course the escorts, they're perfectly clean, they're never going to charge them, but they are looking at the pro-life sidewalk those things that occurred, I mean, if they were to be charged as a crime, they would normally be prosecuted in the lowest level of your state court, be thrown out probably by the state court prosecutor, or, you know, some very, very lenient plea agreement. You know, if you called the police on that, the police would roll their eyes and say, are you kidding? I got real crimes to deal with. But the federal government thinks that this is a federal crime. And you got to be careful because, depending on what happens, these can actually have a sentence of up to 10 years in prison. So if you're a sidewalk advocate out there, you got to be very careful.
Right.
Interactions, because the federal government is out there looking to charge you, and they are brought cases. In one case, they sent an FBI team of FBI agents to raid the home of the advocate, even though he knew the FBI was looking at the case and had said, just let me know when you want me to surrender, I'll self-surrender. They still sent FBI agents to raid his home, in front of his children, family. Completely contrary to normal practices of the FBI, the way they would normally operate.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's the abortion distortion.
Right. And if I may interject, I was going to say, you know, thankfully we are so proud at Sidewalk Advocates for Life of our ability to stay out of trouble, you know, because of our pledge of integrity, because of the fact that we all go through a standardized training, and we sign this pledge of integrity to be law abiding. And we take that pledge very seriously. That I know the Thomas More Society has told us how easy it is to defend sidewalk advocates because of that. And you know, we try to always be above reproach. But like you said, these things could really happen to almost anyone. You know, it's like you said, just bumping into each other or something that could be used against that person that's doing pro-life advocacy because of the administration's and the ability to use the power at B, right? The FBI, right. And whatnot. So DOJ, is that correct?
Yes. I mean, it's the U.S. Department of Justice under the lead of Attorney General Merrick Garland, and who is, of course, a controversial figure, has his own, has come under, you know, even before this was criticized by many, many folks for the way he had handled different issues.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one. I mean, why are you sending FBI agents to raid someone who was clearly not a threat?
Right.
Who's represented by counsel, who says they'll self-surrender. Why are you charging as 10-year felonies something that would be a misdemeanor in state court?
You know, misdemeanor
in state court that wouldn't carry, that would not even have the possibility of prison time attached to it, which is a huge infringement on federalism, really, when you think about it. states since their beginning, since before they were even states, since, you know, they were colonies, developed common law that, you know, as to what is an offense, what's a proper defense to an offense, what are the nuances of those defenses? And that's how most of our interactions in our daily lives are regulated. Most of our interactions in daily lives are not regulated by the federal government, at least they shouldn't be. But Merrick Garland seems to think that the FACE Act should be right there front and center. And that's, you know, problematic, in my opinion, even from a federalism standpoint. And of course that is in many ways, you know, we look at this from a life standpoint and often from a free speech standpoint, but that often comes to bear because a lot of what the federal government is trying to do is override what the states and really the people in those states have chosen to do and set as their policy. And they want to use federal government to override those things. Mm-hmm. It might be sending the abortion pill or something into those states if it where the state has said they don't want that. Various things. That's really what you have as a struggle between the federal government wanting to override state policy.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, I must say that since Dobbs, you know, and Roe's overturned with Dobbs, and it has been because of the differences state to state, it has really made everything much more complicated. But so many women are choosing life in the states where abortion is, you know, not legal, but also there's a lot of women traveling out of state, obviously, to get their abortions. And there's a lot of pressure surrounding those women that are traveling out of state. So it's just made things a lot more complicated. But again, that's why sidewalk advocates, I'll just mention, really want to be on every sidewalk of every abortion and abortion referral facility across the nation. And we need Thomas More. I know that, I think it was last night, there was a buffer zone or bubble zone city council vote that took place in Carbondale. And I believe Thomas More Society was involved with that, just really advocating for that community. But unfortunately, they went ahead and voted for the it's either a buffer or bubble zone. So these are things that we're going to be seeing more and more. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you, Thomas More Society. We are so grateful. And I do want to make sure, Tyler, that we talk about what's been happening in terms of violence against Catholic churches, pro-life ministries, and pregnancy resource centers or pregnancy care centers since Dobbs. And this really ties into what we were just talking about.
Yes. There has been, as folks probably know, a real rash of violence against all those institutions, Catholic churches, pregnancy centers, even our president and chief counsel, Tom Brekka. There was even a protest at his home in Illinois. And this really was even before Dobbs. It was when the draft opinion was released, and we saw protest at the homes of the Supreme Court justices who were presumed to be on that side, including Justice Barrett and Justice Kavanaugh, you know, protesting at their homes, which is illegal. I mean, and even as a strident First Amendment defender, it has never occurred to me that you could target someone's home and get for protest, and that would be considered protected speech. I mean, I just thought that everybody just had walking around knowledge that you couldn't do that, but yet somehow that was allowed, and Merrick Garland didn't do anything to stop that.
Right.
But then you've seen violence, you've seen active violence, vandalism, spray painting, even, fire bombings, I guess, all these institutions. I think there's been more than 100. The U.S. House actually yesterday passed a resolution condemning that violence, and also condemning the Department of Justice for its failure to those things.
Good. I'm glad.
Because it is so one-sided. The Department of Justice has gone after picayune at best violations of FACE by pro-life advocates, and has done basically nothing to defend Catholic churches and pregnancy centers who are providing alternatives to abortion.
Yeah, I know there's one in Asheville, North Carolina that got hit really hard. Mountain Area Pregnancy Services, they were they had spray paint and very threatening language on their building when they came in to open up for the day. And fortunately, the police were all over it, and they got a lot of money poured in financially for the center after this event. They got national news media, positive news media, and also ability to buy more security, to have more security in place at their pregnancy care center. So that was really close to home for me. And I feel a lot of sorrow, but also victory, because we all know who's in charge and who has the final victory and win. And that's the Lord Jesus Christ. So our faith gets us through these hard times. So I wanted to ask you, Tyler, what legislative and judicial actions have occurred in the states both to protect life and contrary to the right to life since the Dobbs decisions? For example, like, what have we seen in terms of legislation out of the state legislators?
So is some things have been very positive and some things have been very negative. I'll speak to the issue of so many states had trigger laws that said as soon as a case like Dobbs was decided, they were going to impose stricter laws. Texas was one of those. Mm-hmm. So that was very good. Other states passed laws protecting life. But we have also seen, as a matter of constitutional law, we've seen some real setbacks, unfortunately. Voters in California approved an amendment protecting abortion, enshrining that right in the Constitution.
Is that Prop 1 you're talking about recently, most recently?
Yeah, California, Vermont, Michigan was a real loss, was particularly hard felt, because Michigan law prior to that was very pro-life. The Michigan's existing law was very pro-life. It said, you know, there were exceptions for life and health, but otherwise basically there was no abortion. And that was, there was litigation, ongoing litigation, as to whether the Michigan Constitution was going to be read to create a right to abortion. I suppose the justices on the Michigan Supreme Court all breathed a sigh of relief, because they didn't have to decide that issue when the voters approved that amendment. But that was a real hard issue. And, you know, a number of Catholic voters in Michigan, you know, you hold out hope that they would have come out en masse and defeated it.
I heard with Michigan that there was a lot of money outside of the state pouring in to kind of promote this like agenda. Is that correct, Tyler?
I'm sure I heard that too. I mean, I haven't looked at any numbers.
Right. Me neither.
You know, whenever they can do that, you know, that's just huge amounts of numbers come in from states, especially that already have very permissive abortion laws, like New York.
Right.
Come in and do that. Also, Kentucky had an opportunity to protect life in its constitution, and it rejected that. So those have been some real disappointments. And the reason why that's really disappointing is, and another big disappointment occurred only a few days ago, and that was the South Carolina Supreme Court struck down South Carolina's recent pro-life law, which was basically a heartbeat bill. And the South Carolina Supreme Court struck that down I would say essentially adopted a Roe KC framework. General take on it, because they recognized a right to privacy and
between a client and her doctor, for example, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't say the state could never prohibit abortion, but then they said that there were some, like, you know, there were times that they could. could not prohibit abortion. So it's a to me, it's somewhat of a difficult opinion to figure out how it's going to shake out. But it's very, but nonetheless, it's disappointing because I would have. I would have argued. In fact, I was signed on to an amicus brief that filed in that court that said, arguing to uphold the law. So I thought the law should be upheld, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
So that's South Carolina. That's South Carolina court.
Not far from us, you know, right over the border. It's pretty close to Western North Carolina. So we have our good friends in Greenville that have a Sidewalk Advocates for Life program. I know you know them well, Tyler. Shout out to them. They're awesome. And it's just, it's really very difficult when these things happen. It's very discouraging. But again, I think that we have to remember to have hope and to trust and to keep praying.
And one of the things about South Carolina that's unique is, unlike only one other state does this, is their Supreme Court justices are elected. They like to say they're elected. They're not really elected. They're put in their position by the legislature. Virginia is the other state that's like that. So as a matter of sort of judicial politics, generally the Supreme Court is considered to be more deferential to the legislature. So notwithstanding that tendency to be more deferential to the legislature, but that you would generally expect in South Carolina, you had that happen, which is, you know, ultimately what comes around to, and, you know, in my opinion, what folks need to be looking to is you do need active language in your state constitutions that protect life.
Right. Very specific active language, right?
Yes, because many times there might be language that just says the state constitution does not speak to the issue of abortion. Okay, well, that means that the state legislature could pass legislation that prohibit that allows abortion, right? The state legislature could say, great, okay, abortion is legal forever, you know, with demand, up to birth. And we, of course, that would be tragic. So what you would really want is you would want legislation in your state constitution that specifically addresses that. Because even if you got a Supreme Court majority, you know, your justices interpreted your constitution that way, which many of them will simply say, like a Dobbs, they'll give you a mini Dobbs decision. They'll just say our state constitution does not speak to abortion, which I think is unfortunate. I think they should go further than that. But the most of the time, what you're going to get is a state Supreme Court saying our constitution does not speak to abortion, unless there is an express provision already there. Then, you know, this legislature is not going to do whatever it wants. And also, judges change. Judges don't stay there forever. And change a membership, and the next thing you know, in 10 years, the state constitution does speak to abortion, right? Because you now have a majority of different ideological composition. So really, what folks need to be thinking about, in my opinion, is looking towards a, you know, good state constitutional language.
Definitely. So what do you think is needed in terms of legislation and judicial action at the state level to protect life long term?
Well, again, that's what I think folks need to be looking to, is asking their legislators to look to state constitutional amendments. And I think, you know, folks need to be careful about legislators who use life as a to play us. Can I say it that
way? To boost themselves into their seat.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, life is an easy issue for people to posture on and not actually mean it, and to do things that it sounds like they're doing something, but really don't. And I'm not taking a side here on the incrementalism versus that. I'm not taking a side on that. I'm just saying that a lot of legislators will come up and say, we did this, that, and the other, and that really doesn't do anything. Or they will knowingly do things. They'll do things knowing that it won't get past their other chamber, or won't get past their governor, or will get struck down by their, you know, by their courts, knowing that full well, instead of doing something that will be upheld. So, you know, sure. I think folks, the activists need to be, that just need to make sure that we're savvy and we're onto our folks and that we're listening to the right folks.
Right.
And that can be very, very hard. That's not at all an easy task.
Yeah. And I'm not, you know, it's not my area of expertise, but I mean, I do know, I've heard that even the North Carolina law has some vague parts and it's not very clear. And so I feel like that's another area where it can create a loophole for someone to interpret that in a certain way that wouldn't be life affirming. Would you agree to that?
Yes, North Carolina's abortion laws, even though we actually got our 20-week, you know, after Dobbs, our 20-week right. ban was revived.
Right.
The federal court lifted its injunction that had previously been entered on the 20-week ban. Mm-hmm. But our statutes on abortion are very ambiguous.
Yeah. And
if someone is of the mind to evade the law, mm-hmm. there are ways that they mm-hmm. can do it and stand a good chance of not being held to have violated the law.
Sure. Yep.
There's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot that's lacks clarity. And yeah. you know, whether that was intentional or not, I have no idea. I'm not sure. gonna have aspersions, but
sure. You know,
I think there's a serious look at what our law is and how it can be cleaned up and improved. Yeah.
And my hope, you know, as a licensed medical professional is that there will be more consulting of medical professionals that are experts in this area and that their input is really vital to writing these laws, because a lot of the ambiguity can come from even just that, just not understanding the proper terminology to use, even medically or otherwise. So I wanted to make sure that we talk about this last thing, Tyler, which is really close to my heart, and that is inspiring stories. I know that you have worked a little bit with women and people that have worked in the abortion industry that have come out of that work, and they have turned away from it and had conversion experiences. And I'd like to know, I'm curious, what kinds of things that they have reported.
Well, I have had that experience, and that is wonderful to be able to work with those folks. And we do at Thomas More provides representation to those people to help them deal with basically any issues that they feel like they may have, employment issues or, you know, whistleblower type issues, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be scary coming out of that environment, and, you know, you need a lawyer. We're lawyers.
That's right.
And especially because when people come out of that, you hear these things, you really drives home that abortion facilities are not like any other medical facility. They're not like where you go just to your ear, nose, and throat doctor. I mean, they are not. I mean, they are. I mean, that they tell stories about how the law is violated. How the, you know, the on-call nurse who's supposed to be on call after an abortion is not really on call. People who don't have credentials to do things are doing things mm-hmm. that they have no knowledge and no training to do. They tell about how it seems like underage, the potentially underage abortions are being performed.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with folks who may be undocumented, undocumented immigrants who don't have the same level of, just naturally don't have the same amount of documentation that that folks who were born here would have. You know, they'll take almost anything as evidence that the individual is of age,
mm-hmm.
and that they'll be the same man will bring multiple women.
Right.
Abortions, which is odd to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's a big red flag for like trafficking, you know, exactly. Sex trafficking work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so they report these things, and the attitude of the facility is we're getting paid. We're not here to.
Right. To judge.
Yeah. We're not going to worry about this. We're not going to look too hard at the age. We're not going to look too hard at why the same man is bringing these young women.
Yeah.
Young women. We're not going to worry about These other things. Someone that we represented, the owner of the facility was living in the facility.
Right.
Living in the facility. That facility is now closed. But the fire marshal had to come and tell her, "You can't live here. This is not a residential building. You cannot live here."
Right. And I think it's public now. I think we can speak to, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we can speak to where that was, what city that was in.
Yeah. Yes, it was in Charlotte. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you want more information on that, you could go to the Sidewalk Advocates for Life YouTube channel, where we have a really beautiful closure celebration of that abortion facility that closed its doors for business. And I'll just mention those advocates, they were not seeing a lot of physical fruit of moms choosing life. But they prayed really hard and they were faithful to being there on that sidewalk and having a loving, peaceful, law-abiding presence. Even through the pandemic, they were out there faithfully along with other groups that are from the community that would come out. And there was a lot taking place inside that facility that no one knew about until, has it been a year now? I'm not really sure. But yeah, really exciting stuff. And again, these women and men that come out of this industry, they need compassion, they need support, including legal support, they need healing and financial connection to new jobs, financial support in that way to kind of get them over the hump of changing jobs. And I'll just mention, And Then There Were None is a beautiful ministry. It is the only ministry directed at abortion workers specifically and helping them achieve all of those things that they need. They are the experts in that area. So I highly recommend, if you know of anyone that needs help and support, And Then There Were None is a great resource. Abortionworker.com. That is their website. So Tyler, in closing, is there anything that you want to add? I know you can't physically be at the March for Life in Charlotte, but we want to know from you just maybe some inspiring words about what you're looking for in 2023 as it relates to just the life movement.
Well, this movement grows and gets stronger every year, and touches more and more people and touches them in ways that maybe they don't even realize. And I did not mention, the way I got into this work was driving by an abortion mill on my way to my regular boring lawyer job and seeing Sidewalk Advocates out beside an abortion clinic and being convicted and thinking, maybe I ought to do something about that.
And
I mean, that's just, that just seems like I feel like I have some responsibility here. I mean, something. And those folks will probably never know that they had that effect on me, and
might now.
But not that bringing me to the movement is any great victory, but multiply this by all the people whose hearts and minds get changed. Think about how many people we now move in our direction. I mean, it's so much stronger than it has been. And so I think that I think we just continue to grow.
Yeah.
And people like you, Elizabeth, who are out there every day, is so inspiring and inspires even cynical, boring business lawyers.
But what's so beautiful is that we can all use our unique gifts, and you are good at what you do, and we need you. You are a very a vital piece of the puzzle. So we need lawyers like Tyler Brooks, and we need organizations like the Thomas More Society and Alliance Defending Freedom. There's many out there, but the Thomas More Society, I just know them really well, and they're phenomenal, and I can't say enough about them. So reach out through their website. They have an inquiry, intake form for people that are needing help and support of their First Amendment free speech rights. So know about their website and know about Tyler. Where are you licensed, Tyler? And where are your offices, if you'd like to mention that before we close?
Well, I have an office in Greensboro and a small office in Cary, North Carolina. And I'm licensed in North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Michigan.
Great. Okay. I knew it was multiple. All right. Good. Very good. Well, thank you again, Tyler, for joining us. And I just want to say thank you so, so much to the Carolina Catholic Showcase community. This has been a wonderful showcase guest speaker today. And again, thank you, Thomas More Society, and thank you, Tyler Brooks.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Carolina Catholic Media Showcase. For more information about us and to support our nonprofit mission of broadcasting the message of Jesus Christ, visit CarolinaCatholicRadio.org and follow, friend, and like us on social media by searching for Carolina Catholic Radio.
The Catholic Church sends us into a bruised and broken world. No matter how busy we are or how much we struggle to make sense of the madness around us, we are called to perform a work of great value for the evangelization of the world. In 2015, a small group of local media pioneers listened and answered this call of the Second Vatican Council, and Carolina Catholic Radio was born. Today, we are the Carolina Catholic Media Network and broadcast the truth of Jesus Christ on 7 distinct platforms to meet the demands of today's media consumers. Our network produces more original local programming than nearly any other EWTN affiliate nationwide, and each of our hosts are committed to educate, inform, inspire, and enrich lives no matter where they are on their journey of faith. Catholic media consumption has a direct impact on our lives. It helps us learn, teach, and practice our faith. And in a world that seeks to cancel the truth, we need it more than ever before. Now, through the end of 2022, we need your support and ask you to join our Circle of Friends giving campaign. As a Carolina Catholic community, we invite you to sponsor or join a circle with those whom you live, practice, and share passion for the faith. Consider sponsoring a circle to memorialize a loved one by asking your friends and family to donate to us in their honor. Or join a circle sponsored by your favorite local program host. There are many possibilities. It is together as a circle of friends, our voice, our community, and our faith will be strong, leaving a legacy for those who follow our footsteps. Join us today at CarolinaCatholicMedia.org.
Faith and charity are key elements of life, but are they at the center of your retirement planning and life insurance decisions? Knights of Columbus, a trusted organization with a proud history of more than 140 years of helping its members, can help Catholic families with insurance and retirement planning solutions. Most importantly, we do this in a way that is compatible with Catholic teaching and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Investment Guidelines. Today, we have expanded our offerings to include retirement annuities, long-term care insurance, and disability income insurance. Beyond the benefits of financial protection, members may take satisfaction in knowing that Knights of Columbus contributes to causes that align with Catholic moral teaching. Let your faith inspire your financial decisions. Terms and conditions apply. Learn more by calling field agent Bob Gordon at 516-551-7838.